Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's installment of Bagel Tech Photo. I'm Kyle Swagger, along with Mr. Very well cleaned up, 20 years younger looking, Alex G. Fox. How are you? My goodness, I didn't even recognize you.
Yeah, sorry, I thought you were talking about Ewan for a second. And I thought,
I don't have to kiss his butt anymore.
No,
I've had 6 inches taken off my hair and 2 foot taken off my beard. And I thought, he might be talking about me.
That beard made you look a lot older than you were. You look like one of those wolves that have been cast out from the rest of the pack to die on the hillside.
Well, it's my new film career. I mean, it's very seasonal, and I only get 2 days a year just before Christmas, but it's something.
Bond villain. Alex Fox, Bond villain.
Exactly.
Sounds good.
Don't forget the G.
Alex G. Fox Bond. Was Alex Fox already taken by Equity?
Oh, you tell me about it. You can't even get a website with that.
Oh, well, fair enough then.
That other gentleman you hear is Mr. Ewan Rankin, who also looks stunning this morning.
I made an effort last 3 weeks. I've worn a short shirt the last 3 weeks, so there we go.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that the same shirt from last week?
Yes. No, it's not. No, it's a different one. Last week I wore a deck chair. This one's a tailored shirt that I bought that was made for me.
It's just turned it inside out.
Got my initials on it, yeah.
Ooh. Very nice, very nice.
Cheers.
I hope my Skype stays together, guys, because you are a bit fluttery, but
you're probably more worried about the sandbags around the door, aren't you?
No. In case anybody listened to the podcast, of course, this is out on Monday. Of course, Japan had a major 8.9 earthquake and a major tsunami. It was headed towards the Philippines, but we seem to be just fine here so far as recording this. We are hearing about internet traffic slowing down, so hopefully we'll get through this show.
One hopes so.
And hope everybody will, of course, our prayers and thoughts are with everybody in Japan right now. Very, very, very bad earthquake. I don't know, have you guys been watching the news at all?
Yeah, I saw a few pictures. It's a few people swimming real quick, which wasn't good.
Yeah, no. No, it sure wasn't. So, turning our thoughts now, of course, to pictures and photography and what happened this weekend, photography news. It was just slightly thin this week, guys. Mm. Of course, it was slightly thin anyways. I mean, we had iOS 4.3 and that was it. And it seems like, why is it that after a week of Apple news, it seems like we go through a week of, eh.
Yeah. No, I mean, you do get the kind of lull after the storm. You get all the rumors building up to it. I was quite impressed. There was a few rumors about another event in April coming out this week as well, but I don't see it. I think the problem that you've got here is the fact that everyone's kind of sitting playing with their new iOS 4.3 and salivating over the thought of queuing today for their iPad, because of course it comes out today, Friday. So
yeah, sure does. Yeah. I'm not in line, and I don't plan on being in line. I'll wait for version 3, I think. Although it looks nice, I think I'll wait for version 3. That way I can get the credit card paid off, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Speaking of rumors, one that I was looking through the feeds on here with the Nikon D800, because we've been talking about this, a possibility of an interchangeable sensor? Is this even possible?
Someone's done this, haven't they? Someone's already done. I've got it something in my head about a manufacturer who's done this. They've got this idea of changing the interchangeable bodies rather than interchangeable lenses.
Yeah,
that was a while back.
I keep saying. I
thought we covered it.
Starts with R. Ryok.
Ryoka. No, Ryoka. That's a drink.
Rico.
Rico.
I don't know. I got my brain. You're lucky, because I was going to say something. Roxio.
Praktika, Olympus, Canon, Nikon. No. One of them.
Yeah. But anyway, no, what they did, they had the camera basically came in Lego bricks.
Yeah, it was.
Just changed the bit you wanted. No, I like this. You've always been able to have, I think it's the, one part of the sensor taken off. Because the sensor works in layers anyway. And the bit that we all damage is literally, they call it a low-pass filter, and all it really is a piece of glass.
Mm.
It doesn't do anything, but that's the bit that gets damaged all the time. And also that's the bit that, you know, they literally just glue it to the front and they will not change it. You have to change the whole assembly, and which ends up costing far more than the camera to replace. You've always been able to take about, I think it's the ultraviolet part of the sensor off as well. They've been able to do that in-house. But now, thankfully, if this is true, the idea of being able to change the sensor, the reason they've given for it is to change it to a different format sensor, e.g. a black and white sensor or something, you know, to give you a different different look.
Now, you but are
what I like
God,
about
Alex.
It is you could replace a damage sensor for...
You well, are a god, Alex, and I bow to your greater knowledge here, but why on earth would you want to change a colour sensor at 16 megapixels to a black and white sensor at 12?
Well,
you might get a higher
I don't
ISO
know if you shoot in black and white at all, but there's
you want to feel like you're in 1965 all over again.
Yeah, but I mean, there's such an issue with converting from colour to black and white or using a colour sensor to shoot black and white. It's all trickery, and it... You know, I've seen some good efforts, but that's all there is. It's like the old days. You could have a piece of colour film, and of course you could print it black and white, but it looked terrible. To get it right, you needed to shoot with black and white film. And I dare say the, you know, the physics is the same on the sensor. If you want to shoot in black and white and you want it to look good, shoot it in a black and white sensor. And that's the only answer I can come up with. But I love the idea of being able to I've got cameras here that are... There's nothing wrong with them other than a little scratch on the sensor. But I won't throw them away because I'm too tight. But I'm never, ever
going to use
them. Is
it worth it?
I'm never going to
say,
use
is
them
it
again.
Worth it?
I
to
think,
pay what God only knows what this is going to cost.
Well, this is what I don't get, because if you were doing that and you were talking about what Alex is talking about, I go back to the days when desaturation was actually getting over a hangover the following day, not thinking about washing the colour out of your image, because you either shot in colour or you shot in black and white, and you wouldn't make a colour image black and white and expect it to look decent. And I do get what he's saying there. And I would have understood this if it wasn't for the fact that this thing's coming out with a 3.3-inch display, which is going to be very consumer-oriented, 1/16,000th shutter speed, which is great for kind of like sports photography and catching stuff in low light, but also in heavy light rather. But it's got video, HD video at 120 frames per second. A pro wouldn't be interested in that. A pro would be interested in the difference between color and black and white, as Alex certainly is, and he's right. But you wouldn't put an HD video capability with that at 120 frames a second. I'm a bit lost.
It seems funny you say that, because you're talking about you'd be, from a pro standpoint of view, the HD video doesn't mean anything to you. But at the same time, this thing itself has to be changed by the dealer. So as a consumer at home, you can't take this thing home and then be able to change the sensor yourself. You have to take it to the dealer. So if it was aimed toward consumers, wouldn't you think they'd make it consumer friendly that I could swap out the sensor if I wanted to?
Well, the idea of doing it with a dealer is probably just a warranty issue. It's like if you buy a new Mac, the only thing you're allowed to change is the, you know, the RAM, anything else, and apparently you invalidate the warranty. But my kids could do most of it.
No, if you look at changing hard drives, they actually give you instructions on how to change hard drives in the literature with Apple, so they can't really hide behind
that. Oh, that's okay, that's changed. So, but, yeah, you know, a lot of manufacturers, I mean, I remember with the old computers, you couldn't even change the RAM because you broke the seal.
But you wouldn't sell something on the basis of interchangeability and not have it made up as a cartridge. You wouldn't be taking the thing to pieces and call it interchangeability. I mean, you may be having a... You know, there's an interesting question there just purely on the basis of whether the trade description is correct. You know, if you've got to go back to the dealer to get something changed, you've got to question that it's interchangeable in the truest sense of the way that you've advertised it to the consumer as being interchangeable. I'm struggling with this. It's great, but I'm struggling with it.
Well, main thing I like is next time I get a scratch. If I buy one of these cameras and I get a scratch on the sensor or anything to do with the sensor, or they do a sensor upgrade, you know, that'd be quite nice. A sensor upgrade, or I bugged up the sensor. Well, look, can you replace that for me? And it'll cost me £200 rather than £1,000.
I was going to say, you could do that now, but it's a couple of grand.
Yeah, well, it's no point. Just
might as well buy a new camera, right?
Yeah, exactly. Of course. I mean, that's what I've ended up doing. I always think, oh, you know, the old camera would be useful for something, but I've never found out anything they're useful for. I mean, we're talking about interchangeability, but, you know, you look at the MacBook Pro, look at the iPhone, and you can't even change the battery on those.
No, batteries, interchangeable batteries have disappeared. The thing of the past now with laptops from Apple.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So my point is, it's not an untested format. That's just where I'm going.
Okay.
There you go.
Fair enough.
But it sounds great.
We're salivating, but we'll wait and see.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's a wait and see game right now. Yeah. Something we don't have to wait and see on is Panasonic has put out its new price line for four of its 2011 Lumix point and shoot cameras. Of course, everybody knows on this show, we're all pretty much a fan of this camera, at least for you, and you always talk about the little bit of the older model that, you know, you don't know if they're really improving or not with the newer ones. But how's the price points hit you? You got $399, $299, and yep, also $350. I mean, the price points there, is the quality still up to what Lumix is really known for?
If you look at the pricing that they've got there, I think they're excellent. And I think the one thing that it's doing is you can still buy things like the FS10, which is a three-year-old model. You can still buy that brand new. And the price of that is tumbling. You can get one of those here in the UK for under £90 now. So it's really, really good. Really good value. And for the camera that it is, in comparison to what else is out there on the market, in the CyberShot range, the Canon PowerShot range, and the Coolpix range, I think Lumix at the moment really has... You know, if the problem that you've got is this, if people knew what the Lumix was about, it would kill the market. But the problem is that consumers aren't buying it, thinking about the logic of it and the recommendation of it. They're buying megapixelage, and they're also buying what reviewers say is a nice picture. And they also stick with their brand. I've had a Nikon. I've always had a Nikon. But at the moment, Lumix, I think, streets ahead in terms of image quality and flexibility as well, and the functionality of the cameras.
How about you, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, I still like them. I've got no, they're still good cameras. The price, I've got a slight issue that I think what's going on in that end of the camera market is the camera phones, not just the iPhone, all the camera phones, they're getting to a level now where if you're going to buy a second phone, not only, you know, to supplement your iPhone, for want of a better argument, you're probably going to buy one of the slightly bigger super zoom cameras. You know, and I was sort of looking at the market recently, and, you know, a lot of the companies, and including Panasonic, are bringing out these sort of bridge super zoom cameras, because I think they're finding a lot of people are moving away from the small ones, because they say, well, why? I mean, I don't want to patronize anyone, but a lot of the people that buy the smaller cameras aren't particularly... they might be enthusiastic, but they're not particularly professional. And they'll look at it and say, well, actually, I can take a picture of my kid on the swing using my camera phone. So if I'm going to buy another camera, I want to buy something that does something a bit different, e.g. a 30 times zoom or one of the other things. So I think this part of the market, as good as these cameras are, I think this part of the market's going to start to diminish, because the phones are going to take over from that end. Not that the phones are as good, but if you're going to buy a second camera, I think you're going to buy a camera that does something slightly more. And if that's just offering you a bigger zoom and a few more gimmicks, then that'll be what it is. So, you know, I think this might be a last shot across the bows with this sort of thing.
Don't you think consumers are kind of thinking at a point right now with, you know, they are getting better on the phones, but they're nowhere near this quality, and all three of us know that. But do you think we're at a point now with the consumer where obviously this is directed towards that, oh, it'll do. Oh, it takes good enough pictures. Oh, it looks clear. Oh, you know, like you said, like a shot on the swing set. And an iPhone 4 would do that pretty much just fine. And in some cases, we've said the iPhone 4 is definitely one of the best camera phones out there, or should I say phone with a camera out there on the market. Is that the direction we're going now?
I think we're talking about the entry-level stuff here. And if we're talking about entry-level camera, my first camera was a Kodak Electra with a flip open top. It was a 110 format camera that my parents bought me, and I remember it cost £35, which in 1972 was an enormous amount of money. And I got that for learning to tie my own shoes. That was my kind of prize, and that's what switched me on to photography. And it was great because they bought me these little cameras. They produced shitty little pictures that were really awful stuff. You couldn't blow them up to anything of any value to other than a 6x4 or something. But they were great because they weren't expensive. I could run around taking pictures. I could bung them in at Boots, and I'd get them back, and I'd get, you know, 2 to 3 week instant returns. And I'm sitting thinking about if Ellis, at the same age now, God forbid he ever learns to tie his own shoes. If he wants a camera to start with, I can give him a Panasonic, and I also know that if he takes a picture where me and the wife go, wow, we can get it blown up to a really big canvas if we really wanted to. He can have it on his wall. We can have an A2 or an A1 print somewhere. You know, there is a lot of flexibility and a lot of opportunity in this end of the market. So I think if you're buying a first camera for a 10 to 15-year-old who wants to get into photography or thinking of playing with it, you take the price and you marry it with the functionality of it, I think it's winner-winner. But I do get what Alex is saying there, that a lot of these people are then going to phones. But, you know, I think if you've got... this is where you're trying to get someone who's going from, I'm not just talking about an image that's me dancing around my handbags with my mates down the nightclub. They're into things that I'll go out on a nice day, I want to take a nice picture, and I want to be able to do something with that picture when I get back. And I still can't do that with my camera.
Just to touch on that, because you're talking about the, you know, the Lumix and being for entry level, and you're saying even 10 to 15 year olds using the thing. Do you personally think that an average parent that would spend $400 on a camera for a 10 year old?
No,
just saying.
The low end of the range is a lot lower than that. I mean, you can buy the current range, the last one before this lot came out for the pricing. The DMC TZ8 is 150 quid. Here in the UK at the moment on Warehouse Express. So, I mean, that's
about $270?
$270. So, I mean, would I spend 150 quid on a camera for Ellis? That's quite a bit. It's a lot, but he'd probably be more likely to get one of my old ones. But if he said, look, Dad, I really want to do it, he's 12 years old, I want to have a go at doing it, I want some manual functionality, I want you to teach me how to use it, I want us to go out together and shoot some pictures. Yeah, all right, son. I'll spend 150 quid on that.
All right. How about you? You got a lot of kids, Alex. How about yourself?
Well, I just tend to give them whatever's knocking about.
They want.
Alex.
I let them use my work cameras if
Alex
I'm standing around.
Alex stops tables wobbling in his house with cameras, mate. He's lousy with them.
Yes, they're disposable.
It's like an archive.
He's got a doorstop.
It's like an archive of cameras.
He's got a Hasselblad for a doorstop.
Exactly. No, I fill them with concrete first. Yeah, no, I completely understand what you're saying with, you know, these cameras being brilliant first-time cameras. But, just to go back to sort of the way I was trying to make the point, I agree that Ewan is completely right. If you're going to learn photography, or even if you want to take a better picture, definitely buy sort of a Panasonic Lumix-type camera. But, you know, just the point I was trying to make is, if you've already got a phone in your pocket, and for sort of 50% of your... I mean, these cameras are there for convenience because they slip into your handbag or slip into your pocket or something like that. If you've already got a camera in your pocket, you're not as likely to go and buy something for the convenience of it slipping in your pocket because you've already got something. So I would suggest that a lot of people are now... I mean, a lot of the manufacturers are moving over to the mid-size cameras, because I think they've noticed that their sales on the smaller ones are diminishing because the camera market have got that sewn up. They're not anywhere near as good, the camera phones, but the convenience is already there. Why carry two cameras if you've already got one in your pocket? The second one has to do something different.
I mean, it's interesting. One of the friends of the network early on was a guy called Paul King, who's an electronics engineer, who I do a lot of work for. And he was out, he's out in Guernsey at the minute, and he shot a picture this morning and shoved it on Twitter, and there's a great big black cloud rolling into Guernsey with the sun behind it, and it looks a very nice picture. Now, he's got an iPhone 4. He shot it on the iPhone 4. He uploaded the picture to Twitter. And I'm going to get him to send me that image, you know, full format. You know, give me the full thing, see what I can do with it. But I think, that image, as well exposed as it was and as interesting it was and as well as it had captured all the highlights of the sun coming around the edges of the clouds and that chroma key effect, that's not going to go up to more than 7x5 without starting to look really, really crappy.
No, I was going to say, I from a consumer point of view, I take the camera, if it was a higher end, say even the Lumix thing here, I would take that on vacation. Or to special events, special gatherings. That's the one where that one's going to go. The other one, if it's a one-off thing, I've already got it in my pocket. So I kind of agree on where Alex is saying about that too. Who wants to carry two cameras? But if you know you're going somewhere, obviously you're going to take that higher-end camera, the one that's all it does. It's just a camera. So, agreed?
Yeah.
Or disagree?
No, I agree entirely. It's just where that choice comes, and I think this is where Alex and I are—we're agreeing on the principle. What we're kind of tussling over in our own minds is the fact of where persons are going to go to fulfil that market. Are they going to go to cell phones? Are they going to go to low-end cheap cameras, you know, like the Casios, those kind of things? Or are they going to bother to stump up just a little bit more and get something that will actually do them to quite a way forward up to the back of the prosumer range? And I think if you look at the expandability of the Lumix market, it'll do a child all the way up to your first step up to a prosumer camera. Quite happily.
I agree. I pretty much agree. Although I will say, I think we're getting towards the point now where everybody wants a cell phone, and I think they're going to start developing more for that market than probably they even are right now.
I think the other thing as well is that we're two photographers who wouldn't think of ever trusting a cell phone to be an image of any value to us. We love taking them out. We love capturing the moment, as Alex keeps saying, and he's absolutely right. But if someone said, "Oh, would you? You know, that's a nice image. You know, that looks great. Oh, you know, you're driving along. You've got a fabulous sunrise because you've got up early in the morning. Are you going to pull out your iPhone 4? Or are you going to reach for a Panasonic Lumix in the middle of the center console of your car?" And I defy Alex to tell me he's going to take it with his iPhone and not a compact that's in his car.
No, I still use the Minox, which has got film in it.
Rawr. Dinosaur.
Let's move on now. Good discussion, guys. This thing looks very sweet, and there's a video from the link here. I have to see exactly where this is at. I don't even know how to... It's TUAW.com. It's called Analog App. They have a little teaser video here, and I guess it's a photo modification for the Mac, and just the little, you know, 13 second video here. This is it's an interesting photo filtering app.
I'm excited.
Okay, and why? And why, sir?
Well, because the thing is, there's a whole load of stuff you can do. I mean, the functionality that's associated with Photoshop is just phenomenal. You got 128 filters with 28 blend modes, and you just sit and think of the combinations of those, and then when you think about layering on top of that, you've got all of those combinations in four layers with varying degrees of opacity. Photoshop is untapped. You just cannot fulfill all of the potential that it's got in terms of photo effect, and the hard time that you've got is actually finding the damn things, is actually getting the effect to look the way you want. If someone's coming out with a whole load of preset filters for stuff, I'm happy as Larry. Topaz do it, but they're such a big price. They are so expensive for what they are, and they sell you stuff that's basically, oh, we put a blur vignette around the image. Here's the photo. You know, here's this in a package of filters. It's 128 quid. Thank you very much. Well, I can do that in 10 keystrokes in Photoshop because I know how to do it. If this thing's coming out with something that's going to go in the Mac App Store, there's a potential it's going to be reasonable on price. And if it's got the functionality that's shown even on that teaser video, I'm salivating.
Salivating.
Was that a bit too gushy? Sorry.
No. You're just overexcited about it. Now, is Alex? Have you seen the video, Alex? Because then
yeah,
I have to say,
earlier.
From completely pro... it does look really, really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a couple of issues. One is a professional. I don't want every amateur to be able to do things that look as good as me.
You know, thank you. That makes me feel wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a case of, you know, I spent years. I mean, about a week ago, I was reading a very old Photoshop book, which shows you how bored I was. And I read something, I thought, you know what, I could use that technique and change it slightly and do this, that, and the other. And it was something that used to take me about 2 or 3 hours to do with, if I got some oil. When you photograph an oil painting, you quite often get some very small dots and et cetera, et cetera. It's just the way it reflects the light. And I used to have to sit there and I used to have to spot out every one if I wanted it to look right. Now, it's just something I read, and it was completely to do with something else, and I just, my brain clicked over. I went, you know, if I did this, that, and the other, and I did a couple of tests, and one thing I did about a month ago, it took me about an hour to clean. I did it in about 2 minutes, and it looked just as good with this new technique. Mm. So what I'm saying is, these, as a professional with Photoshop, I find something new all the time it's an absolute lifesaver sometimes. But a lot of these sort of one-stop shop, click this and it will look okay, Yeah, it will look okay. And for the market it's aimed at, okay is fine. Because the difference is it's either okay or not at all. There is no middle ground.
I'm totally sensing that you're just pissed off that it does it in one take instead of 10.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit miffed. But,
Alex,
you know,
Alex,
people
the photographic
are going to
hermit.
Do something that I've spent years developing the skills to do. And some 16-year-old programmer has gone, yeah, well, look, if I click this button, I can make it happen.
Dude, that's right.
The likes of me and Ewan to spend years how to work it out in the first place for the little bugger to come along and nick it.
Dude, that's going to eat you from the inside.
Oh, it always does. It makes you wonder why you spent most of your life trying to devise these clever things just for someone to come along and make you look stupid.
Yeah, but doesn't that make you feel the same way about Adobe? I mean, you guys used to do this sweat and tear, blood, sweat and tears in a dark room, and now you can just go over to Photoshop and say, woohoo. Isn't it kind of the same thing?
It's kind of the same thing, but what you're saying is because I've been kicked in the nether regions once, I'm not going to bother worry about being kicked in it twice. No, it hurts twice as much because it's the second time around.
My cautionary note with this, though, is to watch out what it does to your image. I don't think it's probably going to instantly save on top of your image. If it's got a Command S function with it where you just immediately save it back, make sure you duplicate your image before you shove it into this. And one of the things that comes along with a lot of these photo programs, if you look at things like for the iPad and so on, you can put a 16 megabyte image in there, and by the time it's finished around and done its Photoshop-y bit with it and given you the filter and pumped it back out again, the same thing's only 720K, and the resolution is 1/4, 1/8, 1/16 of what it was originally. If it's manipulating full-size images with these effects and pushing them back out at the same size that they were put in, oh. But if it's screwing around them, which I think it might, that's the only thing that bothers me, is this, we'll do the effect, but we're gonna dump out an image which is not usable for anything over and above a 7x5 print because they don't want people doing it for professional use. That's the question.
Could depend on price, though. If it's really cheap, like 99 cents, then we may get the effect. If it's a little bit more expensive, it could be the effect. Or is that not
true? Are they talking
true?
About free, though?
Is it free?
Weren't they talking about free on the story?
Because I didn't see anywhere about a price. Well, if it's free, then I might be going to the effect.
Yeah, no, I mean, if there's a pro version of this at 20 quid or something like that, yeah, I might do that if it's not a screwing with my images. But the only problem you get with the kind of play version and pro version is that you never know what the pro version does until you've got it and they've got you 20 quid at that point. That's the negative of the App Store, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, quite often these things are non-destructive filtering, aren't they? They give you a second.
So.
They leave the original one alone and give you a second one. But the moment it gives you a second one, I think, isn't Aperture non-destructive?
Aperture definitely is, yeah, but I'm talking about some of the Photoshop. You get some of the instant filter stuff that's in the iPad functionality that's been in there, and they don't overwrite your file. They are non-destructive as well.
Yeah, I mean, they give you a separate
the
file anyway.
Heavily changed.
Yeah. Well, let's wait and see.
Yeah, I'm interested.
Yeah, it's a wait and see. Another wait and see. Hey, that's kind of the news this week. Let's wait and see. Now, this one, however, though, has got me a little puzzled, Ewan, because you are a Canon man, as everybody knows. Mm-hmm. And there was a review over at Engadget of the T3i, the 600D. They did a review of the camera. They're saying it's not really a compelling upgrade. In fact, they're even pointing you towards to just spend $100 more and get a Sony SLT A55. I'm sorry, that's actually $50 less. They're actually pointing you that direction instead of getting the Canon. We talked about last week, Canon pulling out of, it's flipped my mind right now, but some event, which is, it's a very unlikely.
Camera show.
Now we're getting bad reviews. Yes, that's what it is. Thank you. Mm. And now we're getting a camera that was supposed to be excelling in so many ways.
Was this a bad review, or was this just, I don't think that you ought to think about buying it if you've already got a T2i, it ain't worth going up to the T3i?
Well, that's what I'm saying, is this camera was supposed to be a major upgrade.
Well, everyone,
and it's not really an upgrade at all, is what they're saying.
Well, everyone raved about the T2i. This is the 550D here in the UK, I think. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like the old Rebel replacement in America and the 300D, 400D replacement here in the UK. they got really good reviews because it was an extremely good camera. And as I said, you know, the 300D had one of the best sensors that Canon's ever made. I've still got mine, and I would still use it for commercial work if I had to. The T3i has got bigger LCD on the back. I'm just reading here quickly. You know, it's got some functionality increase, but I think they're not saying that you know, if you've got your T2i, drop it and go and buy a T3i. But I think what they're saying is that, you know, we've upped the game a little bit for the base end entry point camera, and that's valid. I mean, having read the article, I think that Engadget are being a little unfair in that they're looking at it as being drop one by the other, and that's not what this is.
So I'm sorry to say I read the article correctly, and from what I'm hearing about the camera, but you're saying more or less, if you haven't got this
if you want an interchangeable DSLR, you bought the T2i.
Right.
And what they're saying now is the current base entry model for the DSLR range is the T3i, which is far better. I'm not sure it's far better, but it is better. But it's still the entry-level camera.
So that's what's funny, because they're saying it's not an upgrade at all. I mean, that's what I was talking to you about a second ago, is that it was supposed to be a major upgrade from the T2i, and they're saying, the word of the day for me, eh.
No, I agree, it's not a major upgrade. There's not a significant increase in the specs. It's not a big enough and better enough camera to call it a significant upgrade. But I wouldn't, you know, if you've bought the T2i as an entry-level camera, stick with it. Don't go to the T3i because it isn't worth it. But you wouldn't buy entry-level camera to entry-level camera as an upgrade, would you? You'd go up in the range, so you'd go from this to the you know, a 500, or you go to a 60D, or you then go to a 5D or a 7D or something like that. You wouldn't go up to the same base entry-level model.
Now, Alex, do you have an opinion on this? Because we pretty much know that you're kind of wishy-washy sometimes on Canon. Sometimes you like them. Sometimes you're just Nikon all the way.
It's exactly as Ewan said. I mean, it's a replacement. It's not an upgrade.
Yeah.
It's just saying that if you want to go and buy your first, you know, cheap Canon DSLR, go and buy the T3i now, and don't buy the T2i because we're going to discontinue it. I mean, it's just a way of... You know, if they'd have just changed the label on the front of it, it would have been a reason to buy it rather than the old one, because it's the new one.
Yeah.
I mean, don't go and change what you've already got, but if it's the first one you're going to buy this one. It's fine. I mean, Nikon did it, and they did it for years. They just kept adding they did a 70, they did an 80, then an 80S, or a 70 and a 70S. There was so little changed about them. It was just, hold on, we got a couple of sensors left over from a bigger camera, we chuck it in the lower end one. And that's the way the camera market works. Where you've really got to look at these camera markets is their new top end, because that's what you're going to get 6 months later.
I think that's the bigger discussion there, though, Alex, isn't it? Because I think if you look at what Nikon have done in the last 5 years, and then you look at what Canon have done in the last 5 years, Canon are kind of sitting back on their laurels a little bit. And I as a Canon user, I kind of feel they're saying to me, go on then, jump ship if you think you can do it. Go on. Because we might be coming out with something soon. They know they've got me locked in with the lenses. They've done absolutely sod all of any innovation with the bodies. They've just got bigger and different sensors. Their ISO range, you look at what Nikon's done with the ISO range and the improvement of capture in low light. Canon have done nothing close to that. Not even, whether they're just lacking in the technology or ideas and they really can't get to it, or whether they're just sitting there going, well, you're never going to go anywhere anyway, are you? So what's the point? I feel let down by Canon. As a Canon user for my whole professional career, I feel very let down by Canon at the moment. They are not trying, is my thought.
But very interesting to hear you say that.
There's always been a sort of a punch-up between Nikon and Canon, and when I first started using Nikon, Canon was far ahead. It was a long way ahead. I mean, the Nikon had the D2X or something, or the D2, I don't know what it was at the time, might have been the D1 then, as their top of the range camera. And Nikon had the EOS 1D or something, and it was so far superior. It was miles ahead.
It was, yeah.
And, you know, it was, I started off with Nikon and I sort of thought, oh no, I wish I hadn't have done that. And Nikon had so much catch-up to do that it's the same position that Canon's in now. Nikon had to do it because Nikon were getting to the point where the whole pro market was going to Canon, and Nikon were going to end up selling points and point-and-shoots and nothing else, and they had to do it. I think Canon I don't know, because they've still got the loyalty of the people like you and sort of stuffed, really. You've spent 20 grand on lenses.
Exactly.
You've just got to stay
there.
Ewan,
you're stuffed, Ewan.
I am. No, it's true.
But there is a point where Canon are going to have to come up with something, because Nikon are absolutely running away with a game.
Well, my finger's been itching on the credit card for 3 years now, thinking about jumping from Canon to Nikon. And
that would take a lot, because I mean, you like you said, you're tied up in lenses, man.
Well, I've been umming and ahhing for 3 years. That's how much it is. That's how difficult a decision it is. But if someone says, right, okay, Ewan, we've got a really big job for you, we're going to give you 20 grand for the next couple of weeks' work, and we'll pay you up front, I'm gone. I'll be a Nikon in a heartbeat.
You know what? I know what I will. We'll get into the questions here in a moment, but I think I've got both of your guys' prayers answered. If you're fed up with Nikon and you're fed up with Canon, get the Superheads megapixel kitty camera. It's 3 megapixels, and I tell you what, the sensor on it, the cat says it all.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, that combines taking pictures with comedy and entertainment. You can't do better, can you?
The VTEC.
All you need is a spinning bow tie, and you've had the lot.
My lad's got the VTEC, and Bryony's just getting old enough to start understand using the VTEC digital camera and video camera. It's got a 1 megapixel sensor in it. He loved it. Went around shot. I love these kind of things. I think they're great. Get kids into taking pictures as early as possible. Definitely.
I agree. Yeah.
There's a comment in the chat room. Just going back to the thing that we had about purchasing of cameras and Lumix, not Lumix. Dave says, the average non-photographer will usually go for offers and be advised by General Electrical stores when it's down to the staff's personal knowledge and what they recommend. And I think that's probably a better point than the ones that Alex and I were making. It's the truth. People buy what they see in front of their face and what shouts the loudest. Good point.
That's true. And what's ever shoved down their throats, too. You go in there and say, this is great, this is great, this is great. Well, it must be great.
Yeah, exactly. And you look at the influence. I mean, let's say I was saying a few weeks ago, a lady at my rugby club said, I want to buy a camera. What should I buy? And I said, oh, you want to go for this Panasonic Lumix or I can't remember what the other one she was talking about, Sony. And I said, because, you know, and she said, well, yeah, but this one's got 14 megapixels. This one's only got 12. I'm like, that's not it. And she said, oh, well, that's what this other firm in the high street said, who begin with a J. And I said, no. But she went to Park Cameras, and Park Cameras gave her some better advice down the phone and over the internet. And then she went and bought it at the cheapest price possible, which I said, well, you should have gone and bought it at Park, really, shouldn't you? Because they gave you
speaking
advice.
Speaking of giving people advice, should we get into questions, guys?
Let's
do it. Mark Davis, sound familiar? It's the guy from Brighton about his photo frame. he says, thanks for the help last week. Turns out the problem is what you said, Ewan. It's progressive JPEGs not working with the photo frame. Yay! We were able to solve one.
Had to have the
sorry to hog. Sorry to hog the questions, but now I know that. But now I know that. How do I change the files to the right format? Sorry, but I don't have a flash photo editing program.
Flash, as in not flash. I think he's not talking Adobe Flash. He's talking as in
no
a sparkly, wonderful, Fandango-y application.
I suppose that's what he means, yeah.
I've got a thought. Now, here's the thing. I've got a thought in my head that GIMP actually lets you save in progressive JPEG or standard JPEG, and that's free, so you can get that. Alex reminded me as well, because I said I don't know whether he's Windows or not, and Alex pointed me back to last week's question. He's got a Mac, and both Alex and I were sitting messing around before we started to find out whether Preview actually would do it. And I haven't done it yet because I was too busy doing the stuff for the exercise. So, Alex, what do you think?
I think Preview is more likely to do it than not. I don't know if you get a choice with Preview. You know what? I wish I knew where Preview was on
I'm
this.
Doing
machine.
It now. I'm doing it now. You carry on talking. Fill
you're
the
right,
dead
you're
air.
Doing it now. Hold on.
Fill the
yeah,
dead
I
air.
Mean, Preview should do it, but it's like, you know, there's loads of free bits of software. I mean, you could even send it to Adobe Online, couldn't you? And then just get it saved back to your computer.
That's what I was thinking, the free program online. In these kind of cases, isn't Google your friend? Just do a little bit of searching.
What you've got here is, don't forget, I'm looking down the list now, and it does JPEG or it does JPEG 2000, which is not progressive. So you can do a batch convert, because the default is JPEG, so you could do a batch convert with Preview. And if you want to know how to do that, use Automator scripts, and everyone shies away from Automator because they think it's really hard to program, and I'm no good with that kind of stuff, and even I can do it. It's very easy to just have a drag and drop application where you slide it across, drop all the photos on onto it, and it'll resize them and convert them and put them into standard JPEG format. I'm 90% sure now that Preview will do that. So there's your answer, Mark.
Remember, with Automator, there's thousands of them pre-written online. So all you have to do is put Automator script, convert to JPEG, and you'll download one for nothing.
Well, we had Paul in the chat room a few weeks ago said that he wanted to learn how to use Automator to do some photo resizing, and he and I spoke on Skype, and I showed him with a screen thing how to do it in 2 minutes. Dave in the chat room saying pixlr.com has got an online editor. It's a bit limited, but it might help the problem.
Well, that's what
if
you want.
If it's for something simple, yeah, I was going to say that's what. Yeah, if it's simple and it's free and it does the job, why not? It sounds
all
right.
Yeah, I mean, if it's limited, then you're more likely to get what you want.
Yeah, exactly. That's all you want is you want a straight convert, yeah.
Yeah,
that's true. I love that. If it's limited, you're more liable to get what you want. I like that, Alex.
That's why I sell to customers on all the time.
Yes, that's right. Next question.
You don't want a fancy shot. You want what I've given you.
Exactly.
moving on now. Gary in Indiana saying he loves a podcast. Thanks for doing it. He says, I'm a real novice. I only use a compact camera, and get this, guys, he uses a Panasonic Lumix.
Yes.
And you guys have inspired me to start playing with the manual settings. Please, can you explain f-stop to me in simple terms, me also, guys, and how to use it properly? I've asked a few people, but always walked away confused. Who wants to start?
Alex can.
Yes, I can explain it to you properly and probably not confusing. F-stop, the simplest way to look at f-stop, it's the correlation. Oh, that's a long word. It's to do with the beg your pardon, it's to do with the size of the aperture, e.g., how large you have the lens open. And it's actually slightly to do with the correlation between that and the speed. But you know, the most simple thing is to say it's the aperture. The simplest way to look at it is how big you have the lens open or closed. And a stop is an increment in that change of size. You know, you've got numbers on the size of your lens on a big camera, and they are your f-stop numbers. It's that simple.
Yeah.
You know, if they changed f-stops and made them digital these days, you'd just have 1 to 20, and that would be the end of it.
I think
go on, Ewan. Make it more simple than that.
No, I think the best way to think of things like that is to think of your own eye, because it's the pupil. It's the opening and closing of the pupil. So if you've got low light, your pupil dilates to let more light in. But the payoff of letting more light in is it's fantastic, but shoving more light in quickly and expecting to capture it very quickly causes a downgrade in quality. And the ability of the lens and your eye to see deeper into the darkened room. So if you're looking at something that's light in a dark room, you won't see anything at the back of the room because the light is overpowering the retina. So think of a pupil. The pupil wide open, it lets lots of light in. It's really, really great, but there's a price you pay, which is you can't see as far and you lose quality. And when you're in a bright environment, your pupil closes right down as far as it possibly can, because it doesn't need that quantity of light. And you get higher qualities then and more ability to see deeper into distance. That's it. There you go.
Yeah, makes sense to me. Yeah, and that explained it quite well. Basically, the more light you have, the less you use.
The thing that most people struggle with is when you talk about stops, as Alex said there, it's a stop. It's a point where it stops moving, and it's a mark. And people don't get, because they look for something more than just the word stop, meaning stop. It's like a door stop. It's a stop. That's it. It's where it ends.
It's
funny because...
Sorry, but physically, when you used to turn the dial on a camera, it would stop. Because it would slide, and then you get a little click point, which would be that stop, and that's why it's called stop. Because otherwise, you wouldn't be able to. You'd get 22.7, and then you'll start doing your mathematics, and 22.7 isn't the easiest number to divide by, the length of time you want to set the camera to. Yeah. So it would stop at 22. That was all it was.
It was a preset so that you could use a light meter, and the light meter would have the same presets as your lens had. That's it.
Yeah.
It's stupid of me, because I'm thinking f-stop, right? I'm thinking motion before I knew you guys, I would have thought f-stop. Oh, that must mean how fast the pitcher's going by or something.
Mm, no.
Or what I'm shooting. So, yeah, I know. No. I know now. Thank you.
Just it stops.
The tone in your voice says it all. Our last question comes from, how do you say this name? Ashim? Ashamed?
It's ashamed.
Ashamed?
Yeah. The guy's made,
ashamed.
The guy's made a really bad error, and he's ashamed of Manchester. It's like, you know when you write to Lonely Hearts, and it says frustrated of Brighton or frustrated of Idaho? See? He's ashamed of Manchester.
Funny, I was going to say ashamed, but I just didn't think it could be an actual name, so...
Well, you know what?
Yeah, this is why I host the show.
There's got to be a Bagel Tech bloopers now, even if it's just got one thing on it. There's got to be.
No.
Oh, no, we haven't got the bandwidth for that. It'd be too long a show.
And besides, this will be left in. I know you and all too well. Let's get on to the question. I feel ashamed now. Love the podcast, guys. Keep up the good work. Rather stupidly. Oh, yes. God, this is starting off just great. I managed to scratch my lens taking off my UV filter, which protects it. It's not a huge scratch. Stop
I'm
laughing.
Sorry.
But if there's anything I could do to get rid of it or even make it just a bit better.
I was taking off the protective cover and it damaged it. I'm sorry.
Now I know why his name's Ashamed. I feel you, Ashamed. I feel you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
While Ewan's gasping for air there, Alex.
Is there anything you can
how
do
would that
to
happen?
Get rid of
Rather
it?
Stupidly, how would that happen?
Oh, I don't know anymore.
And how does he get rid of it?
I wouldn't be so much ashamed. I'd just probably be a bit annoyed. I'd be annoyed of London. Or
settle down, Mr. Rankin. Settle down.
As Kyle would say, I'd be annoyed of London. Anyway, what would I do to get rid of it? Not a lot. Probably there is some propriety supposed scratch remover. You used to be able to get stuff for your actual glasses, you know, your eyeglasses, which supposedly wiped on the front and polished it and it would fill in cracks and it would limit the problem. In fact, on the very front of a lens, you'd have to really put an enormous scratch in it for it to sharpen a picture.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the way the camera focuses, that end of the lens doesn't actually do very much other than stop, you know, diffract the light in. So if you had a scratch at the camera side of the lens, you're in trouble. But that side of the lens, you'd have to put a pretty deep gouge in it for it to show up. I've got old lenses, and the amount of rubbish when you look at the front of that lens that's in there, and it never shows up on a picture. Or no one ever notices it anyway. So I would say you can try the scratch remover that you get for spectacles. But like I said, in general, unless it's a real, real big scratch, you're not going to have any problem at all. Ewan?
Did you get the tears out of your eyes, Ewan?
Sorry. My first response to this when I looked at it was, you're either A, screwed, B, it's not going to make any difference. And you'll find that you might end up with like a hair across, you know, what looks like a hair, very blurred across the image. And that may come out in Photoshop pretty easily. If you do get a mark that's showing up in Photoshop, go back to A, you're screwed. So anything that you do can't make it any worse. So if you've ruined your lens, you've ruined your lens. I'd start with something that's likely to... the glass is polished. It's polished full stop. So all you're going to do is polish it. So start with a household cleaner and polish it, something that's extremely low abrasive, and then slowly work your way up to emery paper, maybe. I don't know. But I'd start with, maybe a Brasso, something like that. That might be a bit abrasive, though, or silver polish, something like that. Who knows?
Well, failing that.
Windex?
Failing that, just take out all your anger and smash it to bits.
Yeah, anything that polishes anything is mildly abrasive, so work your way up through the abrasive, starting at the stuff that's not that abrasive, and see what happens. But only do that if you're at A, you're screwed.
What about car wax?
You don't tend to be able to see abrasive through your car after you've scraped it, so it's you know, T-cut is and that kind of stuff is quite abrasive.
I would say that's very, very abrasive for a lens.
You see, I'm sitting looking at Brasso thinking Brasso might not be a very good shout. I think that could even that could be a little bit, and Brasso's very, very mildly abrasive. I'd start with a furniture polish or something like that, perhaps.
Well, a lot of the ones that you get for your glasses, they don't actually take things off, they fill it in the same way as when they do your windshield on your car. They don't actually try and polish the scratch out or the crack out. They fill it.
Yeah.
And I think that's how these the ones that clean your spectacles work. So, I mean, there will be something on the market, but once you get it on, put your UV filter on and leave it.
Yeah, don't take it off.
Yeah,
and don't, because Ewan will laugh at you once again. And then,
sorry,
ashamed, you'll be ashamed.
We've only lost one listener. That's the title of the show, though, right there, isn't it?
Ashamed?
Ashamed of Manchester.
I think it's more ashamed of the Philippines, isn't it?
Ashamed of the Philippines, there we go.
Oh, God, guys, stop rubbing it in. If you'd like to get your questions in and feel just as ashamed as Asham did, easy to do, bageltechphoto@gmail.com. And we'll get you on the air. As you can see, we'll answer at you. We'll laugh at you. Regardless, we'll get it done. That is bageltechphoto@gmail.com. Got to give a shout out to UK2.net. They're the ones that keep the entire Bagel Tech network afloat. Without UK2.net, we really couldn't do this show. We couldn't do any show. And we encourage you, please go over to BigelTechNews.com and just use the click-through over there. That way they know we are sending you. And just have a look. You know, we're not asking you to buy anything. Just have a look, check out their prices, and see if it'll work for you. So thank you so much to UK2.net for all their support of every show on the Bagel Tech Network. Ewan, where can people get a hold of you?
You can get me on Twitter at Ewan Rankin, EwenRankin. You can also get me on Twitter at Bagel Tech News, which is like the network output on Twitter, which I tend to use most of all. And you can go to my website, EwanRankin.co.uk.
Very, very good. And Alex?
Well, I was thinking of opening up a new Twitter account, actually, called Ashamed of Manchester, but I'm not sure I'll do that.
God.
I don't even know. That's completely thrown me there, and I don't know. It's only lunchtime, and I don't know what I'm doing now. Alex G. Fox, a Twittery thing.
That's it.
A Twittery thing.
I might get twitterything.com and see if that works.
Yeah. Probably been taken, mate.
Okay. So Alex G. Fox, and please feel free to follow me. I've said some things this week. None of them particularly entertaining, but I have said some things.
Good man.
Yeah, thank God. Yeah. Yeah, if anybody's interested, you can find me at Kyle Ashamed Swagger at Twitter. Oh, God, I'm glad this week's over. It was a good show, guys, until I figured out that I couldn't read. We hope you guys will join us again next week, and we hope you'll come back and keep submitting those questions, because we love getting them and we love answering them. So we're looking forward to that, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in right here on Bagel Tech Photo.